without taste.
Because you know what I always say. If you're not into gay marriage, don't marry a gay person.
Well, you know, one of the things that they say, these people that you're talking about, is that it's the Bible prevents it, but the Bible also prevents us from eating lobster. Hello?
Now shrimp, but
I mean, the Bible has a lot of stuff that we don't
get. How did they get shrimp and lobster?
In the Old Testament, I think it's like you can't eat fish that doesn't have a digestive system or something like that. Yeah. That was one of the
you know what? It's too restrictive.
I can read the Bible.
It's too restrictive. Because when you read the Bible, there's a lot of stuff you shouldn't be doing. You know,
you're supposed to get stoned if you sleep with other men.
Restrictive, and so, you know, they don't apply to us, or they can't possibly apply to us because these verses don't apply. All right, let's go. Right.
But there are some peculiar things in the New Testament, too, that we practice that to the outside world looks kind of weird. Now, it doesn't look weird to us because we do it every Sunday. We take communion and we do some things that the outside world, they even pervert that sometimes.
Right.
So we don't need to defend God. We need to just say he's our God and we're going to be obedient.
Right. But we just need to point out, here's why we're okay with eating shellfish and we're not okay with homosexuality. We're not going back to the Old Testament on that, although I believe that you could because God says, he points out certain things, that's an abomination. I don't recall ever reading anybody getting stoned because they were wearing the wrong mixture of garments. But your point is taken, is that I don't need to understand why God didn't allow them to wear wool mixed with linen. I could just speak out loud that I wonder why that was, but I accept that that's what his requirement was for these people, and he did not require these things of the nations around them, and it's not like he wrote those nations off. We don't have huge records of what he required of them, but we know things like Nineveh, where he did send prophets to Nineveh and said, you need to stop doing these, you know, mistreatment of people. He didn't send a prophet to Nineveh to say, I'm going to judge you because, you know, you're eating unclean animals or you're uncircumcised or anything like that. It was specific to the Jews. Thanks for your comments. I want to just wrap up on 23. There's some things that, it strikes me that interesting, the social safety net that Moses is relaying that God wanted them. And it's always interesting to me. In verse 24 and 25, when you come into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes at your pleasure, but you shall not put any in your container. When you come into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the heads with your hand. You shall not use a sickle on your neighbor's standing grain. Now, you know, if we had a farm, a vineyard, and like somebody wandered onto our property and just started eating our grapes, I'd be a little upset by that. Those are my grapes. Leave my grapes alone. And yet, God is saying, people can do this. And I don't believe that this is people who are just kind of randomly walking by and, oh, I'm going to eat those grapes. But this was for those that were in need. But then God does say, you can't take advantage of the landowner. You can't just bring, containers and fill up and go, I'm going to go take this back If you have a need, there's food there. You can take it. Can't take any containers. You can't bring a sickle and start hacking down and start and hauling his produce off. You can't do that. But you can eat the grains while you're there. Anybody, does that remind you of anything in the New Testament? Some gleaning that went on? New Testament? Jesus and his disciples, it was on the Sabbath. And they went through the fields and they were essentially gleaning, which I don't believe is what they specifically had a problem with, but what they, you know, what you do on wheat, apparently when you do on wheat is then you got to take and rub off all the husk, and that they define that as work. When you got to remove the husks. And so Jesus and his disciples, when they were hungry, and you know, you're not even cooking this stuff, so you got to be hungry to go through and pick grain off you know, when they need it, which is, it was for the needy. So there was an interesting social safety net, which we're going to see some other things. We're going to see them tithing. We're going to see some other examples of what they were supposed to do for the poor. As we enter into chapter 24, and I was told I got to cover two chapters, so I'm going to do that. This is on marriage and divorce. I'm going to read this real quick. When a man, verse 1, when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eye because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of the house. When she's departed from the house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his home, or the latter husband dies and took her to wife, then the former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. Where does that show up in the New Testament, this verse, or reference to it? Remember when they were asking, Jesus, hey, clarify this for us. Can a man divorce a woman for any reason? And then Jesus gives his reply, and they said, okay. But why did Moses permit blah blah blah? And it's this is what that's based on. And the question is, did Moses permit them to divorce their wife for any reason? I would look at this verse, and the verse says, because he has found some uncleanness in her. And it's my understanding that the translator of the word has something to do with, you know, it's like in the flesh or in the nakedness. The reference there is sexual immorality. And so they had gone on, or I think from what I understand, the rabbis had gone on to include essentially anything, the practice was anything that made the husband unhappy, which was not what Moses had said. I think it's essentially what Jesus reaffirmed is for sexual immorality. And so that was a misuse of this verse that had gone on over the years and that they had misapplied. Any comments on that? Yeah, Bruce. And it's not a command to leave your spouse if they've done this. It's not a command. And I think that's where the reference, because of the hardness of their hearts, I think that's a reference to if you can't find yourself to get over this, then you can divorce them. And Jesus' reference was, from the beginning, you know, he had his plan for man was not to cheat on each other and not to have to go through a divorce. So that's these verses show back up in the New Testament. Okay, verse 5. This is kind of a war exemption. when a man's taking a new wife to go out to war, he gets a year off because he got married. What was it during the, Bruce, during the Vietnam War, for a while there, if you were in college, you got a deferment, so suddenly college enrollment, you know, kind of went up pretty fast. So maybe during really tough wars, the marriages went up real quick. I don't know. Verse 10, and these are kind of interesting laws. They are lender-borrower laws, and you know, protection for the borrower, which, you know, again, I just find interesting for, you know, for protection. When you lend your brother anything, he shall not go. You shall not go into his house to get his pledge. In other words, you lend him, you know, something, and it's, you know, you said 2 days, and it's 3 days. You can't go into his house and reclaim it. And a lot of these verses are for protecting the poor. It says, you shall stand outside, and the man to whom you lent shall bring the pledge to you. And here, verse 12 is kind of interesting. If the man is poor, you shall not keep his pledge overnight. And I think what this is maybe referring to is explained here in the next verse. You shall in any case return the pledge to him again when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his own garment and bless you, and it shall be righteousness to you before the Lord your God. So I think, you know, common practice was to like to pledge your garment, which is like one of the more valuable things. If you, you know, if they borrowed something, you know, they say, here, take this as collateral. And if somehow things happened to where they didn't, you know, couldn't repay right away, these people needed their jackets or they needed their coats. And so God is essentially saying, don't, you know, yes, they still owe you, but don't keep their coat. You know, especially if they're poor, don't keep their coat. And it's going to say similar things about the widows. Any comments on that? Let's see, verse 24. So, verse 16, I'm glad about this. Fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall children be put to death for their fathers. A person shall be put to death for his own sin. You know, we look at, you know, our justice system, we look at something like that and we go, yeah, duh. But that was not always the case in a lot of societies. In fact, there was, you know, retribution killings. You know, if you, you know, some nations, in fact, I even today, that happens where that's how they keep you in line. If, you know, you become like a traitor to your country, you read about this in World War II, Nazi Germany, you know, some of the generals or things like that, if, you know, they couldn't defect even though they wanted to because they couldn't get their families out, and they knew that if they defected, their families would all be taken out, shot, and killed. And, you know, God is just reaffirming basic human rights. You know, I find that kind of encouraging. You know, our nation was founded, and we tend to take that for granted, on acknowledging pre-existing rights of people as opposed to the government granting them rights. And, you know, you see here God, you know, going through and saying, you know, these people have rights not to be oppressed. And I'm reaffirming that. And those are God-given. Of course, our nation says that we don't have rights just because we're human. It says these are not our government-granted rights. These are our God-given rights. And God is giving rights here. Yeah, Joe.
It's interesting, though, that many times during the war that God required they kill everybody. Wives.
Yep,
children.
Yep.
Yeah,
He's exacting punishment upon nations. He's not, you know, doing it for, you know, don't do it just because you want to do it. You do it when I said it. And we're going to see an example of where he makes a decision. You need to wipe out this nation and not a nation that's specifically in the land that he passed judgment on. One of the nations that had gone to war with them before they took the land. And you know, verse 18 is a great verse. Because he's going through and he's saying, you need to remember that, and it's, you know, when he's talking about the poor and the needy and all those that, you know, he's setting protection for, and then he reminds them why. And in this chapter, he's going to repeat this twice. He says, I'm going to start in verse 17, you shall not pervert justice to the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you, do this thing. And, you know, of course, that we have exact parallels of that ourselves. But he says, you know, he's going through and he's saying, you know, you can't oppress the poor, you can't do this, you can't do that. And he reminds them, you were slaves. You were servants. You were oppressed. You were having your children, your firstborn sons killed. And he said, and I took you out of all that. Don't ever forget where you came from. And that's, you know, that's the message for us as we're in sin. And Jesus, you know, God is saying to us, don't ever forget where you were and how you treat other people, because you were here and I took you out of that. Yeah, Bruce.
Similar to what do unto others.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. All of these things that we're reading here in Deuteronomy, many of them obviously support good social and civil order. You know, but God codifies a lot of that in this book and says you will be like, you're not going to be like the heathen nations.
Yeah. It's like the prophet said, what does the Lord require of you? To do justice and love mercy. And God is all about, it's interesting, God's about justice. You know, Joe said, yeah, there's times when he says to wipe out nations, and we're going, ooh, that's kind of tough. You know, you're wiping everybody out. But repeatedly through the Old Testament, we see examples where God is all about fairness and he's about justice. Verse 20 is, actually starting verse 19, more of this social safety net. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheath that's in the field, don't go back for it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. And when you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. 10 points. For anybody who can name the prophet who used to do that for a living, beat olive trees. 10 points? 15 points. Remember Amos? Amos? Yeah, okay. First, let me step back. What he's referring to is how they got the olives out of the olive trees. And I even think they may do this to this day. Well, and they do a lot of different fruit. They would go with big sticks. And they go beat the branches like pecans, and, you know, and they fall down. Amos was one of these guys. He, you know, that's what he did to olive trees. He was, you know, that talks about before he went and prophesied to the northern kingdom. You know, and they tended to be pretty, you know, rugged kind of guys because, you know, what do you do for a living? I beat trees. Well, okay, I'm like that. You know, I think Drew would be a good tree beater. You know, that would be good. They'd look at him and go, we're putting you in the olive lineup. And so essentially what they're saying is, okay, you're going to give this tree a beating. You know, you're shaking down, you know, they shake down a fruit, all, you know, comes down. But the olive trees, you know, the trunks are huge. And so you're not going to shake an olive tree. You're going to go whack the branches. They go, okay, you go through, you whack all the branches, you get your olives, and then, you know, don't give it a second whacking. Let them, you know, that's for those who need it. That's kind of like, you know, when you leave some grain in the field. And in verse 21 continues that, when you gather the grapes in your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterwards. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And it repeats that verse that is neat. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. Jumping over into chapter 25. This involves court-ordered punishment. It says, if a dispute between men, and they come into court, and the judges judge them, and they justify the righteous and condemn the wicked, then it shall be, if the wicked man deserves to be beaten, that the judge will cause him to lie down and be beaten in his presence according to his guilt within a certain number of blows. 40 blows he may give him, and no more, lest he shall exceed this and beat him with many blows above these, and your brother be humiliated in your sight. Anybody think of a New Testament reference to that? Paul? And when they gave stripes, they did 40 minus 1. So that, in case they miscounted, because this verse says no more. And, you know, you're going, okay, was that 28 or 29? You know, quite frankly, I lost count. You were talking to me. So they would, you know, subtract one just in case they didn't go over. And so this is what they, you know, they followed. They followed these miscellaneous laws in Deuteronomy. Verse 4, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. So, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't want that ox stopping, you know, every 2 feet and eating while it's doing that. But, you know, God's saying, you know, so this is just one of those interesting ones. 5 points. Anybody can mention it? You know, now don't look on the side there and look at the cross reference there. But who used this as validation for payment of somebody in service to the Lord? 10 points. Paul to Timothy. When he's talking specifically about elders, and he uses this as justification, and he says, "Don't muzzle the ox while it treads out the corn and the grain." And you know, sometimes if I happen to be cooking, you know, I'll use that as the excuse to eat while I'm cooking, and my wife will go, "Stop eating that. That's for you know." No, I reference this verse. I'm an ox. I'm treading the grain, and I should get some of, you know, what I'm working for. So, interesting side verse there. The later verses talks about succession of family name. If a brother dwells together and one of them dies and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside the family. Her husband's brother should go into her, take her as his wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. The next verses talk about, you know, that brother. It's almost like if the brother doesn't sign up for that, go talk to the elders. And you know, the elders go talk to him. And, you know, if he still won't listen, then, you know, it's kind of like he's kind of like a scumbag. You know, he's not. And that's, I guess, for the. And that's if they don't have children. If she didn't have any children by this man, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, there's an importance to carrying on that, you know, the family name or the lineage, and it's for the brother. So there you go. You need to make sure that you're Your brother has children, or else you might get an extra.
Is this also not the law that came into, that was applied in Ruth?
Yeah, that's right. And she didn't have any, she didn't have any kinsmen. Or he was the next closest.
Ruth's mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Was Boaz.
Right, but he wasn't like a brother, so they kind of went, didn't they kind of go pull out the, you know, family tree, ancestor.com, and they found Boaz and went, "You're the guy." And he went, "Man, I guess I am."
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. That's right. He went, well, he's probably looking and going, "Hey, that I kind of like you, Ruth." But then he realized, "But I might not be the guy in succession." He says, "But if I got a clear shot, then yes, I'm your man." So yeah, that was a great story. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. You're right. That's exactly where that applies. Some interesting miscellaneous laws in verse 11. I don't even know if I want to read that. That's something my kids would go, "Dad, look at this." Okay, I'm going to read it. Two men fight together, and the wife of one draws near to rescue her husband from the hand of the one attacking him, and puts out her hand and seizes him by the genitals. Then you shall cut off her hand. Your eyes shall not pity her. So that's, kind of like, okay, don't be doing this. And that's, again, that's kind of rough, but I'm not gonna question the Lord here. Verse 13 and 14 talks about differing weights. And again, this is all about fairness in commerce. When you're selling wheat, which is, typical commerce, and you've got your scale there, what they would do to cheat, and that probably goes on today, I don't know, is they would pocket that, and, it's supposed to be 5 pounds, and then they put another weight there that's marked 5 pounds, and it's really 4 pounds, and you're measuring out, and, wheat. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, Benny, that looks like it's a little bit smaller. Look, I had the scales to scale, I'm sorry. And the Bible talks about diverse scales and things in the book of Amos. That's one of the things that the prophet Amos just slams the people, the nation for, and the culture of that within their commerce that was just rampant, and it cheated people. And it tended to cheat the poor a lot more than anybody else, because those with money had resources and access to the courts that those that were poor didn't. And Amos would, he essentially, goes back and this is the reference in Deuteronomy about the scales and about them not cheating people. That doesn't happen, does it?
Yeah.
What?
So people actually, can adjust that back so they got a unit measure and make sure that their meter runs with.
Yeah. It's not widespread.
I'm going to start bringing a milk jug. My first gallon is, Yeah. That's true. Every now and then I go, "Wow, I must have been really on empty. My car's never taken that many gallons." That's a good modern day reference, Joe. Thanks. Verse 17 is interesting. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. Now this is one of those nations that they were, passing close to as they were going to the promised land, and they were told, wipe out the people in the promised land. But there's other nations, Edom and Moab, and leave those guys alone. Descendants of Esau, I get in this land. Well, in Exodus, it talks about Amalek, attacking them and then them going to war against them. And actually, they ended up being victorious. But then God had, conveyed to Moses. And Moses, again, picture where he is. He's on the other side of the Jordan, and this is one long speech he's getting everybody, but he's not going back into the promised land, and he's running back through this list of all these things, and he says, remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt, how he attacked you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at your rear, and when you were tired and weary, he did not fear God. Therefore, it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from your enemies all around, in the land which the Lord your God has given you to possess as an inheritance, that you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under the heaven. You shall not forget. So he's not, Moses is reminding them, there's going to come a time when you've done what you're supposed to do and you're going to have rest from all your enemies. You're going to have conquered the land. Don't forget. It's kind of like one of those scenes where Godfather, it's time to settle all scores. God says, well, that was pretty good, Godfather. God is essentially saying, I'm taking, it's not for you to take vengeance, but God is saying, I'm taking vengeance, and you're the instrument through which I'm going to do it, and I'm going to give you victory. Go and wipe them out. I don't want them on the rolls of history any longer. Chapter 26. Oh, we're doing good. You guys are doing really good. We got 6 minutes. This is about the first fruits and the tithing. He says, when you should come to the land which the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance. I'm not going to read all this because he's going to say things about what they're supposed to say when they give this up. It says, then you'll take the produce from your ground and tithe, which is a tenth. He's essentially saying, you've got the produce of your land, and you're going to give it. It is for an offering to God. And here's where that goes. And I'm gonna skip forward a little bit. Verse 11, chapter 26, verse 11. And you shall rejoice in everything. And you shall rejoice in every good thing which the Lord your God has given to you. And your house, you and Levite and the stranger who is among you. When you have finished laying aside all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, and have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, so that you may eat within your gates and be filled. So it's again, this is a social safety net. This is, God is essentially saying, you're to give a tenth of the produce of your field, and this is where it's going. Sometimes we'll go and go. We're probably thinking, okay, this is a big thing right now in our country about taxes and where it's going and whether, we think it's being spent well or that's a good idea. I look back on this and go, a tenth sounds like a really good deal. I would take that, every day of the week and twice on Sundays. These people, later on, of course, they were warned about, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but they're warned about, having a king, because then, the God tells them, okay, when you get a king, he's going to require you to go to war. He's going to do taxes on you. He's going to do this. He's going to require, so that's, they were doing, so let me do a quick recap here. If you're a landowner, which I don't know that everybody was, well, at this point, pretty much, I think everybody was, because you're going in and they're possessing houses and fields and crops and vineyards that had already been established and were already yielding. And so it's kind of like the early days, I think, of the American frontier. There's free land. But Moses is essentially saying there's going to be poor people. There's going to be people that are going to end up losing their land. They're going to be this. He's saying, okay, if you're a landowner, you're going, okay, let me see if I got this straight. I can't pull 100% of my crop out of the field because I got to leave some for the poor. I got to leave the corners, and I got to, if I leave it, forget a sheath back behind, I can't. So I can't get 100% yield. If some of these guys want to wander through my field and pick my crop, I got to let them do that. The crop that I do yield, I got to give a tenth to, and then it goes for this social safety net. So there was a lot of poor people that were always going to be there, but God had made provisions and made commandments. And again, he said, I'm going to bless you because you follow this. Now, you think everybody was following that? I guarantee you that there were people that were going over their fields, and you know there'd be some poor people kind of go, don't even bother that field. That guy, you know, he's the Grinch. He's, you know, there's not one. I guarantee you, there's not going to be one grain in that field. Whereas the people that were righteous were saying, I'm leaving this behind. I'm not going to beat that tree twice. This is for the poor people, but they got to come and get it. I'm not going to go hand it to them in buckets. But actually, the tithing, that, you know, that actually, I imagine the way that was distributed, it was like that, because they load up their 10%. And again, that's all kind of on the honor system, isn't it? I mean, how is somebody going to check and see whether you just loaded up 10% of your crop and brought it in? And essentially, you know, God is saying, that's between me and you to make, you know, and it's going to be counted to righteousness. And again, it reminds them, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget where you were, and don't forget what I did to you. And, you know, essentially God's saying, this wasn't your land. You didn't make these wine presses. You didn't plant these things. You didn't plant these grapes. I guess that the famous line. You didn't build that. And in this case, that was true. God is saying, you didn't build that. Somebody else built that, and I took it from them, and I gave it to you. So don't for a minute think, this is mine. Look what I did. It says, remember the poor, and remember where you came from. Any comments on that? We got through chapter 26. I've done my job, and Ken's going to be very proud of me for getting him right where he needed, I think where he needed to be. I don't know. Is he going to be back Sunday, or Bruce? He's going to be back Sunday. Okay. Any last comments on that? Anything we talked about? Going once, going twice, going three times? Thank you for your attention.